It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Steps back, three. Yes, sir.
Get a shot up. This is for the win.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in. It's an early start to hour number two on a Tuesday, and they are just about ready to rumble a divisional rivalry wildcard matchup. It's the Tigers and the Guardians from Cleveland. Just performed the national anthem. Beautiful rendition there. You can watch that game on ESPN TV later on this afternoon. 1:30, our coverage of Padres and Cubs from Wrigley. And 7:30, we'll also be carrying the Cincinnati Reds and the Dodgers tonight, right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader. Same matchups tomorrow and on Thursday, if necessary. Padres at Cubs. We'll bring that to you. Also, a 1:30 broadcast start time. Let's dive in to what's still ahead on today's show. Dings and dents and the good, the bad, the ugly. And very much looking forward to our conversation with USD Coyote head football coach Travis Johansson. A humbling, tough loss over the weekend for you Yote fans out there. 51-13 up in Fargo against the top-rated Bison. Where do you go from here? How should the team be perceived? What's the messaging look like down there in Vermilion ahead of Dakota Days and Murray State this weekend? Everything on the table with Coach Johansson joining us around 12:40. Let's dive into your scorecard now. Major League Baseball playoffs, Tigers and Guardians about 8 minutes away. They got the first pitch timer, 9:25 is what it says on that countdown clock. Tigers and Guardians from Cleveland, coverage on ESPN TV. Padres at the Cubbies, 2 o'clock on ABC, coverage on ESPN Radio at 1:30. Chicago a -130, money line favorite to win game one. Red Sox at Yankees, another nice grudge match there. 5 o'clock on ESPN, Yankees favored to win -135 on the money line. And the Reds visiting the Dodgers 8 o'clock, coverage at 7:30 here on ESPN Sioux Falls. Dodgers the heaviest favorite to win game one, -210. Your four teams with first round byes: Blue Jays, Mariners in the American League, Brewers and Phillies in the National League. Monday Night Football last night, we played two and neither game particularly good until later on. Things got a little interesting late between the Dolphins and the Jets, but the big news out of the first win of the season for Miami is a massive loss via injury. Gruesome knee injury suffered for Tyreek Hill. Here's Dan Graziano on the latest.
Dislocated his kneecap, which is as gruesome as it sounds. It also involves other damage to the leg. According to Adam Schefter today, multiple torn ligaments. He will have surgery today to repair those. His season is over. They had to take him to the hospital last night because a dislocated kneecap can mean all kinds of very bad things. You know, artery damage, nerve damage, all that kind of thing. So hopefully the ligaments are the worst of it, and he can have his surgery and heal up.
And that's Dan Graziano. Tyreek Hill, the latest NFL star to be out for long-term, season or otherwise. Still no update, by the way, on quarterback Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens. Look to get anything on that situation later on in the show. Elsewhere for the Miami Dolphins, they're now 1-3 following their first win of the year last night. Here's head coach Mike McDaniel on how he and the team can focus in the wake of Tyreek Hill's season-ending injury.
I can just open my eyes and see an entire team and stadium and organization that doesn't have time for my feelings. I've never hesitate to, talk about how I invest in players, and that's a gigantic piece. But as a leader, head coach, play caller, I have to be adept at rising to the occasion for the group.
And certainly the Miami Dolphins can only go up from here. They're 1-3. The Jets are 0-4. Chris Canty, not too fond of the Jets' effort last night.
If you're Aaron Glenn, this brand of football is unacceptable. You shouldn't tolerate losing a football game that way. It's different if you're outmanned. The other team has more talent. The other team has a better scheme. But last night, the Jets didn't even give themselves a chance. You had 16 called penalties, 13 accepted. Six of them were pre-snap penalties on offense between false starts and illegal shifts. And then on top of that, with the post-snap penalties, the personal fouls, that is completely unacceptable. And then the turnovers, for God's sake. You had two opportunities in plus territory in the first half and didn't get any points out of it. One should have been a field goal. Justin Fields ends up fumbling on fourth down. The other one, Braylon Allen's got the ball going into the end zone for a touchdown and fumbles the ball. It was a lot less about the Miami Dolphins winning that game and a lot more about the New York Jets giving it away. And if you're Aaron Glenn, that cannot be acceptable.
Very frustrating start to the season for the Jets. They're 0-4, and a frustrating start for one of their defensive stars, Sauce Gardner, who has this explanation for not getting calls this season.
I feel like, me personally, us not winning, like, because I watch football all the time. And I just feel like, I don't know if this is wrong to say, but I think I get called for more stuff just based off of us just not winning. I watch these winning programs and it'd be some egregious things and it don't get called, like, you know, letting the players play. Like, I got called on something today where it's like, I know the route, everything, and I'm just supposed to let him just push off at the top of the route. I'm seeing him count the steps, all that, like, he's not going to catch the ball regardless. I just feel like in general, yeah, even the Mike Evans ones, I just feel like us not winning, it's just what goes on. Like, if we don't win, then I feel like we don't get the calls that we should get, and we get called for the calls that we probably shouldn't get called for.
That's Sauce Gardner essentially saying because we're a bad football team, our calls and lack of calls are getting even worse. Things are bad for the Jets, 0-4. Justin Fields has been a bright spot when he's in the lineup. We'll see what they can do moving forward. The final score last night, game one, 27-21. Dolphins win the game. Game two was a much less competitive contest. The Broncos literally and figuratively running away with the win. Very successful game on the ground for Denver. RJ Harvey finally getting a little bit more carries in the backfield. J.K. Dobbins was equally as impressive. Bo Nix on the offensive success last night.
Just running the ball efficiently really helped. We stayed out of third and long, and we were first down, second down, first down. So didn't have many. I mean, we had a few third downs, but we really, it wasn't a third down game. We weren't just sitting in third down all day. So that helps. And then, you know, running the ball is great for the offense.
That's Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos. Marcus Spears talking negatively about the Bengals. Who is to blame for the way it's gone post-Joe Burrow? The Bengals 0-2 since their quarterback went down.
This is Zach Taylor problem.
Yeah.
And when you think about Jake Browning, even what you asked Joe Burrow to do, Joe Burrow is so good out of the shotgun that a little bit of it is I can understand because he's such a surgeon in that situation. But it's also getting his seasons ended at a high level by playing that type of football.
Three times.
And now you got Jake Browning out here who is absolutely a sitting duck. Because the first thing you see with the Cincinnati Bengals, I want you to watch Cincinnati line up on offense, and I want you to watch how many people the defense put around the line of scrimmage. When you line up in shotgun, it's to remove people from the box. It's to make people spread the field out. They put eight people up there against Cincinnati when they stand in the shotgun.
And they can't.
So again, I've said this, Zach Taylor has failed this football team from an offensive standpoint because you have had a franchise quarterback hurt three times and the backup stands no chance.
And to be fair here, there's not a whole lot of franchises out there in the NFL that you take away a generationally talented top five quarterback in the league and you say, they'll be just fine. They'll figure it out. The roster talent kind of behooves you. If you pay a quarterback, you got less money to pay elsewhere. The Bengals do have a lot of very handsomely paid people on the offense, but the issue is that it's at skill positions and not on the offensive line. It's in the backfield. It's not in the offensive line. And certainly the Bengals have an uphill battle to stay competitive. I don't think they will. Going to be a long season for Cincy. And for those of you out there, there's been some people saying, go get Kirk Cousins. He'll be much better than Jake Browning. He might be a little bit better. But last time I checked, Kirk Cousins ain't exactly mobile either, and that offensive line is an absolute problem for Cincinnati. They take it on the chin last night, 28-3. The final score, Denver and the Bengals both are 2-2. Week 5 around the corner, Thursday Night Football gets us going. The Niners and the Rams from Los Angeles, 7:15 on Prime Video. The Rams, upstart team, 5.5-point favorite on the Thursday night football contest. On Sunday, Vikings at Browns, 8:30 a.m. from London on the NFL Network. Broncos at Eagles, noon. Lions at Bengals, 3:25. Sunday night football, Patriots at Bills. And Monday night, Chiefs visiting Duval County and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chris Canty, Baltimore Ravens letting down Lamar Jackson. Are they failing him by not getting over the hump?
With Lamar Jackson as your starting quarterback, seasons that he begins and ends, you can pencil in the Ravens for a dozen wins. And the fact that they haven't broken through when he's been the full-time starter since 2019 is an absolute embarrassment. They've won 27 games, including playoffs, over the last 2 years. And this team still hasn't gotten a future Hall of Famer to the Super Bowl.
And certainly that's what happens when you have such a dominant dynasty like we've seen with Kansas City. It does not allow many opportunities for quarterbacks from the same conference to achieve success. Joe Burrow got to the dance once. They certainly lost the game to the Rams. But other than that, since Mahomes became Mahomes, nobody else has really had that championship-level success in the AFC. In the NFC, it's been a mixed bag. Jalen Hurts has been there. Brock Purdy's been there. We're still waiting to see who else emerges in the AFC. But yeah, the Ravens have let Lamar down. Some would say Lamar has let the Ravens down in big spots as well. They've had better teams than they have this year. But I'm not burying the Ravens just yet, despite a 1-3 record on the season. The Eagles are the best team in the NFL, and at worst, they're the second best team in the NFL this week as we get ready for week number 5. But not everything is hunky-dory out there in Philly between A.J. Brown, a star receiver who can take over football games, and the team itself. Sal Palantonio, is there any rumblings that a trade away from Philly could be in the works for A.J. Brown?
He wasn't even asked whether or not A.J. Brown wanted to be here or not. But all the talk in Philadelphia is whether A.J. Brown should be on the Philadelphia Eagles. Should he be traded? Should he want to leave? And I don't see any sign of that within the team. We have to wait until we hear from A.J. Brown. Let's not put any words in his mouth. I think it's really important for the man to get an opportunity to speak besides what he says on Twitter. So trading A.J. Brown, or whether he wants to be here or not, I think it's sort of like, you know, as my children will say, Dad, that's a false narrative.
It might end up being a false narrative. The Eagles are winning after all. And there's some players that might be content with, you know your role. I don't have to be a superstar every game. But also, you want the stats, because stats equal getting paid. You can come back to the negotiating table and say, here's what I did. Here's definitive proof of what I did. 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, help your team win some games. If you go to the negotiating table and suddenly you're A.J. Brown and you've got 850 yards and 4 touchdowns, that's not going to be a whole lot to bargain with when the team is devaluing you. So you certainly could put yourself in his shoes and understand the frustration. College football now. Iowa State will open up the weekend for our area teams at Cincinnati, 11 o'clock on Saturday on ESPN2. Augie and Sioux Falls collide at Bob Young Field for the Key to the City rivalry game. That gets going at 1 o'clock. Murray State at USD, a 2 o'clock go time. Michigan State at Nebraska, 3 o'clock on Saturday. South Dakota State at Youngstown State to open MVFC play, 5 o'clock on ESPN+. And lastly, Gophers up against it, top-rated Ohio State on the road, 6:30 on NBC. Saturday night. Rounding out the scorecard, your NASCAR race is at Charlotte's road course this weekend, Sunday, 2 o'clock on USA. And the WNBA will meet the other half of the WNBA finals tonight. Fever and Aces getting together in a winner-take-all game 5, 8:30 on ESPN2 from Vegas. And the Aces favored to win by 8.5. And by the way, wouldn't it be pretty darn cool? I'm not going to drop a curse here on Becky Hammond and the Aces, but wouldn't it be cool if we had Nate Tibbetts, heavily tied into South Dakota, our state, certainly around this area and the universities in this area, and Becky Hammond in the WNBA finals as the coaches? That would be pretty darn sweet. Not going to speak it into existence yet. Aces need to finish the job tonight in game 5 against the Fever. Let's dive into your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number 2. And we start with a lot of rankings to break down, and starting at the South Dakota high school football rankings from the SD Media poll. Lincoln remaining your top team, 5-0, just a little bit better than Brandon Valley this week, 19 first place votes to 5 for the Lynx. They're followed in the poll by Harrisburg, O'Gorman, and Jefferson. O'Gorman and Jefferson both 3-2 on the season. Double A, Yankton Bucks are 4-1, and their only loss this year was playing up a class. So undefeated at their Double A class, Yankton 1, Huron 2, Pier 3, T 4, and Sturgis 5. In those rankings, Single A, Sioux Falls Christian undefeated, a unanimous number 1, followed by Del Rapids, Madison, West Central, and Tri-Valley. And your top-rated teams the rest of the way, Elk Point Jefferson in 11B, Freeman Marion in 9 AA, Wall your top team in 9 Single A, and Sully Buttes your top team in 9B. South Dakota High School Volleyball Media Poll, Harrisburg retaining that top spot from last week in AA, followed by BV, O'Gorman, Watertown, and Rapid City Stevens. Single A, it's Del Rapids, followed by Dakota Valley, Sioux Falls Christian, Clark Willow Lake, and Lennox. And in Class B, it's Chester, followed by Northwestern, Burke, Warner, and Bridgewater, Emory, Ethan, as that last team undefeated at 14-0. Those polls available at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Let's get into the D2 poll this week, where the Augustana Vikings, after not moving last week after a win over Bemidji, they get a win against Winona and move up one spot. The Vikings now the 8th-rated team in the country. Ferris State 1, Harding, West Florida, Kutztown, Angelo State in the top 5, Augie at 8. Other NSIC teams in the rankings, Duluth at 13, Mankato at 15. And then making your way down, no one else in the rankings in the NSIC, and Sioux Falls Cougar football is out of the others receiving votes category following back-to-back losses to Duluth and Mankato, respectively. Now to your FCS poll, NDSU remaining number 1 in the nation at 4-0, followed by SDSU also with a 4-0 mark, Tarleton State number 3, Montana 4, and Montana State, a team with 2 losses, both of which coming against either SDSU or up competition, a loss to Oregon to start out the year. Bobcats still very well thought of at number 5. Other MVFC teams in the rankings, Illinois State at 6, Southern Illinois at 10, North Dakota at 15, and South Dakota hanging on at number 21 with a record of 2-3. Youngstown State also in the rankings. That's the opponent for the Jackrabbits this weekend. The Penguins are rated number 24. South Dakota State running back James Basinger was honored on Monday as the Missouri Valley Football Conference Newcomer of the Week. As we continue with your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number 2, freshman from Littleton, Colorado, tallied a team-high 53 rushing yards, also had 32 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns in the win. South Dakota State opens conference play Saturday at Youngstown State. Kickoff is 5 o'clock Central at Stambaugh Stadium in Youngstown, Ohio. Minnesota Twins are making a semi-surprising change as they're letting go of manager Rocco Baldelli as of yesterday, ending his 7-year tenure that included 3 AL Central titles after a second straight disappointing season. President Derek Falvey saying in a statement, "This is a difficult day because of what Rocco represents to so many people here. Led with honesty, integrity, and unwavering commitment to our players and staff, gave himself fully to the role, and I have tremendous respect and gratitude for the way he carried himself." Minnesota 19-35 after a trade deadline sell-off. They move off from 10 players, cut $26 million from the payroll, and the team went 23-43 after the All-Star break, 19-35 after the deadline, and that was only better than the Colorado Rockies, the worst team in Major League Baseball this season. May have been time for a change regardless of the trade deadline sell-off. Twins manager Rocco Baldelli out after 7 years on the job. Baldelli, a overall record of 527-505, the third winningest manager in Twins history behind Tom Kelly and Ron Gardenhire. Lastly here, more Minnesota pro sports news. The Wild have gotten it done with left winger and Russian native Kirill Kaprizov, an NHL record 8-year, $136 million contract extension that marries the two together through 2034 at least. The deal, the highest in NHL history in terms of total money and average annual value, $17 million a season. That breaks the mark previously held by Oilers star Leon Draisaitl. News comes just 1 week before the NHL season started after the prolonged extension talks between Kaprizov's camp and the Wild, in which Kaprizov recently turned down a deal that would pay him $16 million annually, $1 million more per year. Gets the deal done. Kirill Kaprizov here to stay in Minnesota for the near-term future. Those are your Reliabank headlines of the day for hour number two. When we come back, it's time to dive right in. There's a lot of bad news in the NFL regarding injuries. That's why we're going to get you Dings and Dents, brought to you by Wayne and Mary's Nutrition Center, and the good, the bad, the ugly on the way before our conversation with USD Coyote head football coach Travis Johansson hits at 12:40. Keep it here. It's overtime on a Tuesday, and it continues next on ESPN Sioux Falls.
Online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
To get to on this Tuesday edition of Overtime, Dings and Dents, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and our weekly chat centered around the USD Coyote football program. First-year head coach Travis Johansson will join us here in about 15 minutes on today's show, recapping a tough loss up in Fargo against the Bison, and previewing what's to come, Dakota Day's matchup against the Murray State Racers, 2 o'clock coming up on Saturday from down in Vermilion. Time now, though, for injury updates from around the sports world, and we'll get started right with the Minnesota Vikings. A big update on J.J. McCarthy and a bigger update on Brian O'Neill. It's time for Dings and Dents on Overtime.
We all have our days.
Do I have a mark on my face? It really hurts. Right here. Not here or here so much. Right here.
Nope. Ship shape.
Jesus, what happened to your face?
I knew it.
Days when we don't feel quite up to snuff.
I'm afraid that in my weakened condition, I could take a nasty spill down the stairs and subject myself to further school absences.
Days where everything hurts.
A world of pain.
We're often our own worst enemy.
My fingers hurt.
Oh, well, now your back's gonna hurt. Because you just pulled landscaping duty. Anybody else's fingers hurt?
But we still give it a go and we show up.
You're dead! I saw you die!
I was faking.
Who's in, who's out, and who's a game time call? Dings and Dents.
Everyone has days where they might feel a little dinged or dented up. Visit Wayne and Mary's here in Sioux Falls to get some great advice and get yourself back on the right track. Find Wayne and Mary's on the east side, 24th and Sycamore, or in central Sioux Falls off of Kiwanis Avenue. That's Wayne and Mary's Nutrition Center. Today is the final day to take advantage of the 55th anniversary celebration. Buy one, get one 50% off all Wayne and Mary's labeled products. They got educational events with top supplement brands and so much more, celebrating 55 years. Wayne and Mary's Nutrition Center. We start with the Minnesota Vikings and an update on Brian O'Neill. This was a big news item today. What's going to happen? Is it best case? Is it worst case? Is it somewhere in the middle? And it ends up being the latter, somewhere in the middle. Vikings tackle Brian O'Neill suffered a sprained MCL in his team's loss to the Steelers on Sunday in Dublin. The two-time Pro Bowler could miss time to putting the team's patchwork offensive line in a more precarious position. According to ESPN.com, starting center Ryan Kelly also departed Sunday's game with a concussion. That's his second this year and at least the fifth of his career. Vikings were already playing without guard Jonovan Jackson, the rookie who had surgery last week on his left wrist. And to be fair, this is a disaster so far injury-wise for Minnesota on the offensive line. It's very likely we'll see Blake Brandel, Michael Juergens, Christian Darrisaw, Justin School on the offensive line. The Vikings dinged up and dented up. They got the Browns in London coming up on Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And the J.J. McCarthy news of the day, Pro Football Talk reporting the Vikings quarterback missed the last two games with an ankle injury. That's not breaking news, but he could start the process of returning to action this week. We're going to handle Wednesday probably in a unique way from what we could kind of be a hybrid day. But as we get into Thursday, Friday, I'm hoping we can at least get him out there and get him taking some drops and starting to get back in the normal rhythm of the practice week. That's head coach Kevin O'Connell, because you're really going back to, he had a fast Friday before the Atlanta game, but you're really going all the way back to the Chicago game to when he had a normal circumstance of practice to be able to stack days together. The Vikings have a bye in week 6 after wrapping up their 2-week trip to Ireland and England. So the week 7 game will likely be the target for McCarthy to retake the offensive reins from Carson Wentz. No big change there, but an update. He will be, appearing to be, returning to practice and ramping up, if you will, for the Minnesota Vikings in the days to come. Other news to get to, of course, the big news in the NFL overnight is the status of Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill. He dislocated his left knee during last night's win over the Jets and was hospitalized overnight while undergoing further testing. According to Mike McDaniel, the coach of the Dolphins, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter today that Hill also tore multiple ligaments in his knee. That will end his season. He'll have surgery later on today. Hill's injury is expected to be season-ending. And in an interview with WSVN 7 News overnight, Hill's agent Drew Rosenhaus said he accompanied Hill to the hospital where he was undergoing an MRI and a CT scan to determine the extent of the damage. Are there torn ligaments? Is there torn cartilage? Are there broken bones? To check on the blood flow and any nerve damage. Rosenhaus said all of this is getting checked out. We don't know the extent of the injury. That's what they got for now, Tuesday morning. The article at ESPN.com. But we'll see what other details become available. All the best in recovery. Very gruesome injury and a long road ahead for Dolphins receiver Tyreek Hill. It's unknown at present whether the banged-up Ravens will have quarterback Lamar Jackson for Sunday's game against the Texans because of a hamstring injury, but they announced that Pro Bowl defensive tackle Nnamdi Madubuike will be out the rest of the season with a neck injury. This 27-year-old experienced symptoms after the Ravens' 41-17 win over the Browns on September 14th and was placed on injured reserve with a neck injury on Saturday. This is a significant blow for the Ravens defense that has allowed an NFL worst 33 points per game this season. Madubuike, in the second year of a 4-year, $98 million contract, he'll be out the remainder of the year. And again, to be clear, no update yet on the status of Lamar Jackson. That will be available in the days and hours ahead. Other football news, Niners quarterback Brock Purdy has a toe injury again and remained an issue in his return to the lineup for the team's week 4 loss to the Jags. And a short week before Thursday night's game against the Rams doesn't provide much chance for his toe to heal. Purdy was estimated as a non-participant in practice on Monday, and general manager John Lynch said on KNBR Tuesday that the team will, quote, take every precaution to make sure that Brock's all right. They got a good backup option in Mac Jones. Might be a better option than Purdy if Purdy isn't fully healthy, and it certainly doesn't appear he will be for Thursday night football against the Rams. Lastly, a brief foray over to the hockey world where we got tough news to pass along for the Florida Panthers. Panther captain Alexander Barkov needed surgery on Friday to repair the ACL and MCL in his right knee, injuries that will likely sideline him for the regular season and potentially for the playoffs as Florida tries to win a third consecutive Stanley Cup. Barkov injured on Thursday in his first official practice of training camp. Really brutal stuff for the Florida Panthers as they look to get the season started on the right foot. And Alexander Barkov going to miss the bulk of the regular season and likely the entirety of the season itself. Let's round out and wrap up the segment now. The good, the bad, and the ugly from the sports world. A lot to get to here.
Who's been the problem child today? Displayed their ugly side. Whined a bit too much and is now setting a bad example. Bert is calling out today's headline makers with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, always brought to you by Hardscapes Outlet. Planning a new outdoor space can be hard. Don't get left out in the cold. Plan your next project today for success with the help of the pros at Hardscapes Outlet. Don't let your project turn out bad or ugly. Get some good advice in planning today by making a trip to Hardscapes Outlet, hardscapesoutlet.com. Good news. Items from Willie Mays' personal collection netted over $6.5 million across a two-day auction that benefited the late Hall of Famers Foundation. According to Hunt's Auctions, 944 lots of items from Mays' collection sold for north of $6.5 million, including buyer's premium, during live and online auctions that were held Saturday and Sunday over the weekend. Per Mays' wishes, all proceeds from the auction go to delivering education, training, and health services for youth through the Say Hey Foundation, which Willie Mays founded back in 2000. Included in the items sold were Mays' historic 1954 season MVP trophy, Silver Slugger Award, and World Series ring. Mays' home uniform in the 1962 season, worn during that year's All-Star Game and possibly the World Series, went for $634,500. Interesting stuff, historic stuff over the weekend for the late Willie Mays. Bad news here. Minnesota Lynx coach Cheryl Reeve was fined $15,000 for her comments and conduct on Friday night, lambasting the officiating in her team's Game 3 semis loss to the Mercury, a league source confirmed to ESPN yesterday. Indiana Fever coach Stephanie White and Aces coach Becky Hammond were also fined $1,000 apiece for their recent public criticism of the officiating. White told reporters at Fever practice on Monday that she got fined for supporting Cheryl, which I think is crazy. In the final minute of Friday's Game 3 between Phoenix and Minnesota, Reeve had to be restrained from confronting the officials after no foul was called when the Mercury's Alyssa Thomas stripped the ball from Lynx star Nafisa Collier, and leg-to-leg contact resulted in Collier injuring her ankle. Bad news, ugly news there for the Lynx head coach Cheryl Reeve, a $15,000 fine, and worst of all, her team, an unceremonious early exit from the WNBA playoffs. If you were to reset the field here from the beginning, you'd be very surprised to not see Minnesota alive, and you'd be surprised to see Vegas on the ropes, and you'd be surprised to see the Liberty also out of the WNBA playoffs. Very interesting things ahead. Phoenix in the final, awaiting the winner of Indiana that does not have Caitlin Clark, that does not have Sophie Cunningham, and the Las Vegas Aces that got out to a tremendously slow start this year but has been the best team in the league over the last couple of months. And lastly, the ugly news to get to. This didn't get talked about yesterday on our show, but frankly, really disappointing, honestly, with the Ryder Cup. Not the coverage per se, but just the conduct and the way that patrons handle themselves. Not fans, but patrons is what they say at the Masters. And again, I'm going to set the stage here for you in terms of my relationship with the sport of golf and how I was educated about the game and within the game. I'm not a great golfer by any means, but it was made clear to me by my grandfather on my mom's side when I was a kid how you handle yourself on a golf course and how you handle yourself and treat the game and treat others you're playing with and take off your cap and shake their hand and look them in the eye at the end of the round and be quiet during people shooting. Don't be talking. Don't be on social media. Don't be doing outlandish things and drinking a bunch on the golf course. And I'm not passing judgment on anybody that does that. That's just the way that I was brought up within the game. And I'll tell you honestly, what a stain it was this weekend to try to enjoy the Ryder Cup coverage when it was an absolute party and just the weirdest, most obnoxious behavior you could imagine out there at Bethpage Black. Two-time U.S. Ryder Cup champion, Tom Watson said yesterday that he apologized to the winning European team for the behavior of American fans at Bethpage Black. I'd like to congratulate Ryder Cup Europe on their victory. Your team play the first few days was sensational. More importantly, I'd like to apologize for the rude and mean-spirited behavior from our American crowd at Bethpage. As a former player, captain, and as an American, I'm ashamed of what happened. The 76-year-old Watson, who counts 5 Open Championship wins among his 8 major titles, played on 4 Ryder Cup teams. He was the winning captain of the U.S. team in 93 in England and the losing captain for Team USA in 2014 in Scotland. The European team, and Rory McIlroy in particular, were the target of constant heckling and insults, some directed at his wife and family, over the 3-day event in Farmingdale, New York. Oftentimes, the jeers took place as he was in the process of hitting a shot, and it caused delays and prompted the PGA of America to add extra security. There were several nasty, yucky videos, embarrassing videos coming out from the weekend at Bethpage Black up there in New York. And certainly, this is not what we want, right? I mean, on either soil for the Ryder Cup or any golf tournament, the one that comes to mind for me is the monstrosity that's the Waste Management Open each and every year. You got fans chucking beer, throwing it in the air, jeering the crowd, whatever it might be. It's super out of line for me and what I know about golf. And I'm fully aware I'm coming off as an old school, stick in the mud, angry old man right now. But this is not golf. And certainly it's not what we want golf to be. It's a respectful environment. You can have some fun. You can say some fun things at a tee off. But the minute that you're jeering and lambasting and going after players and family and personal lives, and don't even get me started about the fact that Rory's wife almost got hit with a beer, which I don't care if it was hit out of somebody's hand or thrown, it's out of line. Golf gives you access beyond what normal sports do. You're sharing the course. You're sharing the experience. You're getting roped off. You're letting players walk through. They can hear what you say. You can maybe grab a fist bump along the way. This access is something we don't want to take for granted. You can't act like a stooge and expect it to continue into the future beyond ugly. For me, what I saw at the Ryder Cup at Bethpage this weekend, and I am glad to see the United States and Tom Watson in particular, the captain, apologize for the behavior at Bethpage Black. And we can only hope in 2 years when we go to Europe, that'll be extinguished. And 2 years after that, when we come back to the USA, we can behave a little bit better and give the sport, the players, the patrons, the fans, and their families what they deserve, which is a lot better than what we saw over the weekend. That's the good, the bad, the ugly, and dings and dents. When we come back, it's time to finish up this Tuesday edition of Overtime by talking all things USD Coyote football. Head coach Travis Johansson is our guest coming up next on this Tuesday edition of Overtime.
The best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up a big Tuesday edition of Overtime. Kind of a Minnesota Tuesday around here with the tough news surrounding Rocco Baldelli. The big news for the Minnesota Wild, inking a deal finally with their young star, Kirill Kaprizov. We're focused on college football, in-season chats with our Big Four area teams, Augie, USF, USD, and SDSU. And we head to the ESPN hotline right now, talking USD Coyote football with head coach Travis Johansson. He joins us on the hotline now. Coach, always a blast to have you. How you doing this week?
Doing great, Bert. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. And certainly, Coach, 2-3 the record. Tough opener up the road in Fargo. Probably easily, definitively, the toughest place to play. Number one team up in Fargo on the road to open conference play. What do you take away as a team from the 51-13 loss on Saturday?
Well, not much, you know, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not really, I guess, nothing positively. Outside of a bunch of lessons we got to learn. And, it's one of those places that, you know, it's when it rains, it pours. And, that's happened to us before. We've had success up there before. So, you know, getting ourselves back to a position where we feel like we can execute a game plan to a level that we feel like we can be more competitive than that is what we're focused on. And, you know, that building has done that to a lot of programs, including ours at times. And, you know, we've gotten over the hump as well. So we got a lot of experience to draw from, and both positively and negatively, but we're certainly motivated to do that.
Coach, what can you tell us about the messaging to your team post game, even at the halftime locker room? How do you kind of galvanize the troops from here moving forward? Because the MVFC, as we know, we talk about on the show, is an absolute grind. I don't care if you're playing the Bison, the Salukis, the Redbirds, the Jackrabbits, all those teams are going to come to play and want to beat you on Saturdays. How do you galvanize things moving forward? And what's the messaging like in and around the program these days?
Yeah, I mean, objectively, every single goal we have is still in front of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I told the guys, you know, the confidence I draw from is, you know, I've been in this position here before. And, you know, when we were in our 21 season, we had a really good football team. We fought. We got, you know, lumped pretty good up in the Fargo Dome. And And we're a playoff team that wasn't prepared to make a deep run in the playoffs as a result. And I told him if we ever reconstructed our 21 season, I'd have liked to have that experience to play that game earlier in the year to, raise some concerns and get some things addressed earlier in that year that, would maybe set us up a little bit better for a playoff run. So, we lost three games last year. We lost three games this year, and we've got an opportunity to, get ourselves going a little bit as we got a home game, and that's what we've got to be focused on more than anything right now.
And it's a big one again, Dakota Days, the return of a lot of alumni. Should be an electric atmosphere coming up against Murray State Saturday, 2 o'clock. If you can't make it down, you can watch the game on ESPN Plus, Midco Sports, or listen to John Thayer on the call on the Coyote Sports Network from Learfield. USD Coyote head football coach Travis Johansson, our guest here on a Tuesday. How you guys attacking the week, Coach? And as you do take that long look in the mirror after a loss like that, what are a few deficiencies that might come to mind this week that you and the staff are really focused on ahead of Murray State on Saturday?
Yeah, I think number one, we're doubling down on our process. All the things that have got us to a successful position to date are the things we'll continue to do. But, I think when we look at it holistically and our defensive execution of that game plan, our checks and adjustments and ability to get those accomplished, versus some of, the pictures we got from NDSU, we need to improve. Our offensive line, they're motivated to improve some of our protection, of Aiden, particularly in that football game, and, address some, both technical, fundamental, and schematic things that we want to do better moving forward. And then, I think overall, just our technique and fundamentals, when you're playing good teams, those come to the forefront. And, our ability to block and get off blocks and to tackle and break tackles are always at the forefront of our program. And, when you're breaking in a number of guys, you can maybe let that slide to a certain degree. And there were times that showed its face on Saturday.
Coming up this Saturday, USD going to be home to the Murray State Racers, still a relative newcomer to the Missouri Valley Football Conference. Coach, what stands out about that program? Is they're still looking for their first win this year?
Yeah, I think they're invested in bringing in some talent that can help them alongside of youth and getting them that experience. And, they've had a tough schedule to date, so I don't think the scores might be indicative of how close they might be. And I think they're probably excited to get to another football game and to put those improvements on tape. And, they got some experience at the offensive skill side where their quarterback has been in the program as a coach's kid, and receivers and running backs, there are a number of guys that are back with experience, and they've improved from a year ago. You can see that on tape. And then defensively, they're really multiple and give you a lot of different pictures to kind of have to process through. So, yeah, I think there's a lot they feel like they're building on, and they improve week by week. And, outside of that, we really have to have a ton of internal focus, more so than what's our opponent look like at times.
Speaking of that internal focus, Coach, the obvious answer is we got to have success running the ball. You got two wins this year. In those two wins, big games for LJ Phillips Jr., including a 301-yard performance in recent memory. What else comes to mind as a few keys to a Coyote win on Saturday, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, we focus on a lot of the same things every week that lead to winning football. We can't, and you hit it right on the head. We've got to outrush our opponent. We're 19-0 in the last 19 games. We've outrushed our opponent, and 26-2 in the last 28. And that's a big part of what we do. We can't give up explosive plays. Anytime we do that, we're in good position. If we give up three or less, I believe we're 22-3 in our last 25 games. So, last week we got outrushed by our opponent. We gave up, eight explosive plays. That's just a formula for a loss for our program and how we do things. And we've got to focus on certainly those two areas more than anything.
Certainly a few big keys ahead of a big Dakota Days showdown coming up on Saturday. Coach, I know you've been around the program for a while, probably not as engaged and involved in Dakota Days as you'd like to be. You got a football team to take care of, and certainly big jobs over the last couple of years for you. Give me a couple of sights and sounds, some takeaways from Dakota Days year in and year out, and what you're expecting to see coming up on Saturday from the Coyote faithful.
Yeah, it's a special time for the University of South Dakota. It's homecoming, and we get every you know, alum back and certainly, you know, people from all over the state come out to Vermillion to, you know, have an unbelievable, really week. For us as a program, we've got to hide from it more than anything because it's there's a lot more buzz in the community and there are a lot more things going on. And so, yeah, between our fans, our student body, our alumni, you know, just people that are supportive of this place. This weekend is such a great experience here in Vermillion, and you know, sold out Dakota Dome and on Saturday is certainly the highlight for us, and we can't wait to get in front of that D-Days crowd and play our best football and show how far we've come in a week.
And it is a big week ahead. 2-3, the record for USD Coyote head coach Travis Johansson and the Yote team this year. Coach, always a blast to have you. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks as always for the time.
You bet. Thanks, Bert.
That's USD Coyote head football coach Travis Johansson, and a guy that it's not hard to be fired up about moving forward in terms of what's ahead of the program. We got work to do. No positive takeaways. How about that for some honesty in a tough loss at Fargo against NDSU? That was a tough one, 51-13. But I will tell you, an honest-to-goodness organic story for my weekend. Saturday, the game went down. Sunday morning, I'm out and about running some errands. I'm at Quickstar, of all places. I run into a buddy who happens to be a big USD fan. And, of course, we're chopping it up. Man, how about that loss yesterday? Yeah, this went wrong and that went wrong. I don't know where we go from here. And I said it honestly. And now I look back and I say, man, that was pretty smart. USD fans out there, let's be honest. Let's have a conversation about how disappointed you are in your season and how bad things are for USD Coyote football. If I told you through five games you were 2-3, you would be disappointed. You got a right to be disappointed because you should be 3-2. If you look at the schedule and we're being honest and realistic and focused in on this team and who they are and the challenges that they had this year, you lose at Iowa State. You're playing up a class. That's a really darn good team that is up a class in the FBS level, continuing to be a top 15 team. And yeah, they're also still undefeated. That is a loss on your schedule. Lamar, Northern Colorado, Drake, we know how those went. I think that Lamar's the one that got away. North Dakota State on the road, opening MVFC play. I told you in your wildest dreams, you go up there and beat the number one team in the country. You'd be thrilled if we're being honest there. Maybe that's a loss, and that's not a season-ending loss by any means, but I'm just going to say it out there like I told my buddy at Quickstar. It's not all that bad. You literally have one more loss than you should at this stage based on a lot of different metrics, and you got certainly big opportunities ahead and a friendly schedule over the next few weeks to get back on your feet. Home to Murray State for D-Days on Saturday, at Indiana State coming up the following week, and on the road in Cedar Falls against UNI the week after that. And then we can have a conversation about really tough schedules the rest of the way. Four games, four ranked opponents to round out the season. We're going to know exactly what USD Coyote football is by the end of the regular season, whether they're playoff caliber or not. Illinois State, top 10 team. North Dakota, top 15 team. South Dakota State, top 2 team. And Southern Illinois, also a top 10 team, depending upon which rankings are your cup of tea. So, yeah, right now things are tough. A tough, humbling loss up in Fargo against the Bison. Let's move on. Reframe, refocus. USD, big things ahead, I'm sure about that. And it comes down to running the ball. How about that for a nugget moments ago from the coach? We are such and such and such and such when we outrush our opponent, and it's been very important for USD to do just that. That'll be the case coming up on Saturday. Murray State, the opponent, and it's a 2:00 start time. Festivities way earlier in the day down in Vermillion. Get down there and take it all in. Dakota Days, 2:00 start time against Murray State. Pregame coverage for the football broadcast for the Coyote Sports Network from Learfield begins at 1:00, and on your TV, if you can't make the trek, ESPN Plus and Midco Sports. That's USD Coyote head football coach Travis Johansson, and that is our show today on a Tuesday. Tomorrow, we'll welcome in Augie head football coach Jerry Olszewski once again. We'll also be talking New York Jets and broad strokes of the NFL with Jake Asman of the Jake Asman Show. Hope you once again can make us a part of your day on a Wednesday edition tomorrow when the next program for Overtime rolls back around right here on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.